jasoncharles.net.
Deep talk, deep sounds.
Hey, this is Evie Grieve. The following podcast is not affiliated with East Village Eye, the monthly magazine of popular and avant-garde culture that existed in print from May 1979 to January of 1987. However, if you'd like more information about this legendary downtown publication, and for archives and exclusive merchandise, including East Village Eye t-shirts and accessories, go to eastvillageeye.com or printedmatter.org.
This is the East Village Eye on jasoncharles.net.
Hello, I'm Evie Grieve, your host for the East Village Eye on jasoncharles.net. And we are here in this episode at the Tompkins Square branch of the New York Public Library at 331 East 10th Street between Avenue A and Avenue B. And our guest is the branch manager, Corinne Neary. Hello, Corinne.
Hello.
Thank you for letting us come into the library today. And I don't know if it's okay to say we're here just slightly before opening time to the rest of the public. So
yeah, definitely. Thank you for coming in early.
And we have some kids in the background in case anyone hears some kids. What's going on? It's a kids.
There's a class visit going on from the Earth School, I think. And then we have another class visit in a few minutes from another public school. So that's a popular thing in the mornings before we open.
I almost called it a children's happy hour, and I thought that's not quite probably the right term to use. But
For them.
Yes, yeah. It's very happy. Well, anyway, we're happy to be here in this great building. This is really, when you think of buildings around the East Village, this is really one of the more iconic ones, that I, in my opinion, here right across the street from Tompkins Square Park. Can we just start out talking a little bit about the history of this building? As I, my little research, I saw that the building opened here in 1906. Could you talk a little bit more?
It's 1904.
Oops. Okay. Yeah. First fact check of the program. Thank you.
December 1st, 1904, I think, was the opening day. And yeah, it's a Carnegie Library, which you can probably tell by looking at the, sort of has that iconic Carnegie look with the arches and the windows. I believe it was the 9th Carnegie Library in the city.
Okay.
1904 it opened, and it's been open ever since, except for, you know, a couple of quick renovations.
Where was the branch before? It was actually here on 10th Street. What was servicing the neighborhood at that time?
There was a previous incarnation. It was the 5th Street branch of the Aguilar Free Library, and there were a couple of library systems operating in New York at that time. The Aguilar Free Library was one. There was the New York Society Library and the New York Public Library, and they merged at the beginning of the century, 1901, I think, due to the grant from Andrew Carnegie, basically. Okay. He had pledged, I think, $5 million to build the system of branch libraries in the city. And he built 60, I think there's 68 in the city, in the five boroughs. Wow. Altogether.
He did the libraries before he went into the deli business, right?
Yeah.
Okay, it's a bad joke. We've obviously only been into the public parts of the building as patrons here through the years. Are there any sort of like fun sort of facts about the building? Maybe there's a hidden swimming pool anywhere, like over at the Cristo Dora House right around the corner from us on Avenue B.
Yeah, surprisingly, and you know, as a good thing, there's really not a lot of non-public areas in the building anymore. The third floor space, which I think housed the custodian's apartment, which people hear about sometimes.
Right.
The buildings used to have custodians which lived full-time because they had to operate the furnace and stuff.
Right.
Like that, has been the ESOL classroom upstairs for some years, and they have classes 6 days a week with the ESOL. So that's also a very busy part of the library. And then the basement, we do most of our programs down there. So there's not that many hidden nooks and crannies, unfortunately.
So you don't have that, like the hidden tour of the Tompkins Square Library branch or anything? That's not part of the programming?
No, pretty much. If you've come to the building a lot, you might have seen it all.
Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about the programming. One of the things that I love about this branch is when you're here, you feel like you're in the East Village. It has a very local neighborhood feel to it.
Yeah.
And without naming names, I've been to some other branches in the city. They're great, obviously provide a wonderful service to the neighborhood, but you don't necessarily feel like you're in that neighborhood. in here, I feel like I'm in the East Village. You have programming, obviously, related to the East Village, books of interest to people downtown. Could you talk a little bit about what goes into some of the programming here at the library?
Yeah, we work hard on the programs here, and we do spend a lot of time on that. The children's programs, of course, are huge, and that's, you know, something that's been going on for a long time. But in the past couple of years, we've built up the adult programs a lot. And we do have an interest in the neighborhood history when we're working on some of those programs. And actually, we have something new coming up related to the local history collection. We're expanding it quite a bit. Soon there will be many more books. We've sort of have a little pocket collection coming.
Okay.
That will stay here at this branch. You can check it out, but it won't travel around to other branches. When it's returned, it will stay here. And it's part of a project we're doing with the coffee shop, the 9th Street Espresso.
Okay.
We're going to be doing a pop-up library in the coffee shop a couple of times a month for the next year or so.
Wow.
With the local history collection.
Would that be both branches? There's a 9th Street on 10th Street, which is right next to the library. Then there's the actual 9th Street Espresso on 9th Street.
The original location, right?
Okay.
No, I
yes.
think this is going to be next door for right. now. Yeah, but maybe expanding to the 9th Street location in the future.
That's great. We're having a bit of a news scoop here on this podcast.
You heard it here first.
Wow, that's great. What's the timing on that?
It should be starting at the end of April.
Okay.
Something like that.
We'll keep an eye on that. Perhaps that'll show up. I'm Evie Grieve, and I'm putting in a plug for my blog here, eviegrieve.com. Now in its 12th year of covering the East Village, so that'll definitely be a nice item for the site. One of my favorite things of just looking at the programming, the film selection. Yeah, I remember back in January, you had films, Myrna Loy, I believe it was celebrating a birthday, at some of the Thin Man movies, and even going to, I remember last year, I thought it was a very bold choice. You showed Mother, Darren Aronofsky film, and I saw that and I just sort of laughed because when I saw that in the theater, people at the end of the film were angry.
It's a disturbing movie.
People were angry, leaving heading to the box office to ask for their money back or something. But could you talk a little bit specifically? We could probably talk about all the individual program. I don't want to just focus too much on the film, but that's something that's always been of interest to me.
Well, we do play a lot of older movies, you probably noticed, because that's a personal interest of mine. If you follow our Instagram page, you'll see a lot of old Hollywood stuff. That's just something that I'm personally interested in. So I try to, I always have the idea in terms of programming that you have to go out with something you're interested in and also something that you think the public is interested in too. But if you don't really care about it, then it doesn't really, it's not going to fly.
Right.
It won't really take off. So old movies is something I've been into since I was a kid, and I maintain that sort of obsession to this day. So that's why we play a lot of those old, we're mostly doing these days a lot of pre-code movies, the early 1930s, which tends to bring in a certain audience. I don't know why.
Okay. Well, I think that's great. That's, these are kinds of things some of these you probably came around and see on like Turner Classic or something on cable. And obviously I've seen too, I think it was earlier in March, I think you had The Green Room, like a recent Oscar film, and, obviously a lot of stuff for kids as well. Was it? I don't have children, so I'm not really hip on all the kids' movies, but like Ralph Wrecks the Internet, I think.
Yeah, we do kids' movies every Monday afternoon. I think the children's librarian who does the kids' movies used to do a read-aloud on Mondays. She moved that to another day because Monday she just thought the kids are a little hyped up when they come in the afternoon. So we started trying the movies on that. That's just a Monday thing.
Okay.
But it tends to work.
Can we talk about some of the other programming? You've been kind enough to send me a link to, it's March, here's what's going on at the library. And I'm going through it's crazy how much stuff you offer. I mean, crazy in a good way, of how much stuff's, bead making classes, book readings, the films, which we've already talked about. I mean, there's, I don't know how many things are going on at any certain time.
Oh, a lot. Some days we have programs back to back all day. We might have 8 programs going on through the day, something like that. And it gets a little bit hard to keep up with at times. And I think we're booked through the end of June right now in terms of adult programs. But it's fun. That's what I enjoy the most.
Is this something as branch manager, is this kind of the library kind of leaves it up for you for the programming? Or is there sort of certain, is this something you're supposed to require to do X amount of hours every month of community programming?
The branches do have a good amount of autonomy in what they do.
Okay.
Definitely. So we have certain things that we're supposed to, look at in terms of what we want to offer. in a way. Like, you know, we try to focus when we can on a lot of literary programs, you know, because we are a library after all. But we don't stick only to literary programs. We do arts related programs a lot because one of our librarians has an interest in visual arts and another librarian does music classes because he's a musician. So it tends to be driven a little bit by the interests and talents of the staff.
Right. There's also like exercise. I mean, yoga, I believe, is one of
We have a couple of yoga teachers, and we also have it's called Body Blast, you know, Monday nights, sort of a cardio exercise.
Okay. I'm not too familiar with that. Where is that in the library?
In the basement.
In the basement.
Yeah, most of these things are in the basement. The room we're sitting in now, the small program room, we use for some adult programs, like book discussions, craft programs, things like that. Most of the larger programs are downstairs.
From here on out, this room will be known as the podcasting room. And we'll have the jasoncharles.net plaque out front. It's a kind donation to the library. Well, and also just we talked a little bit about, you know, focusing on the local community. And can we talk a little bit more about that as well? You've had special events. You've had the East Village Arts Festival, for instance, and you had the gallery walk. Mm-hmm. Are those things going to continue on?
Yeah, I mean, we did our second annual arts festival this past December, and we will do something again. We haven't really decided what form it will take because this year, the first year it was a one-day sort of bonanza. We had 20-something programs through the building all in one day. This year we decided to expand it to 2 weeks, partially to simplify it in a way because it's difficult to have all the things going on at once, but also to make it bigger. So we might, you know, we need to sort of look and see how that came out, pluses and minuses when we go into planning this coming year. We might end up doing a weekend or something like that. Probably will change a little bit until we find the perfect sort of formula.
In terms of reaching out to other businesses and organizations in East Village, I mean, are you finding a lot of camaraderie and community spirit when you reach out to these folks?
There's an organization called the EVCC, East Village Community Coalition, I believe. And Laura Sewell is the head of that, and she's wonderful. She has contacts with a lot of these local businesses, and she will, you know, sort of help us reach out to them. And they have, you know, taken part in the festival, offering prizes and sort of other things. And that's a great organization to partner with.
And also, one of the things, too, I know you've done several of the tours of Tompkins Square Park.
Yeah, we do walking tours. We have one coming up in May as our next one. It's fun. We have done a few different versions, and we did a LGBT writers and artists of the neighborhood last time, which was a little bit expanded outside of the park area. And we've done one's focus on the immigrants in the area. We've done an early history of the park, I think, at one point. It's fun to do that because I get to learn about the neighborhood, too. Which is something I didn't know too much about when I came to this branch. From the West Village, I knew a lot about that library and that, you know, neighborhood, but this is a learning thing for me still over here.
Who has been doing some of these walks with you? Who's been your tour guide?
Michael Paul is my partner.
Okay.
So a local guy, photographer. You probably know him.
I do know Michael. Yeah. I'm familiar with his photography work. He has sent along some excellent tips. New coffee shop opening on 14th Street.
So. We have fun working together because we're very different, you know. I'm a little bit organized, and he's sort of the opposite, but he brings a sort of fun excitement to the tour, which I don't have personally. You know, he has the jokes, he has the memories of the neighborhood, that kind of thing that he'll pull in, you know, and I'm more memorizing my lines about the history, you know. So it's like, you know, opposites attract kind of thing.
And I think Michael Paul works in part-time at the East Village Vintage Collective, which was the location of our last East Village Eye. So
yeah, it's a great store.
Yeah, we have this. Moving forward, we'll have to always have Michael Paul somehow be involved.
He has to be involved.
Yes. So, well, I know I remember one of the walks in last summer, I walked through and there was like, why are 60 people just gathered around over here?
We have had a lot of people come at times. Like sometimes I think we should have done a limit, you know, but we never expected that many people to come.
Right.
It's kind of exciting to have a huge crowd, but also terrifying.
Right.
You know?
I was in the back. I was heckling like,
Surprisingly, we haven't really had a heckler yet. I'm always thinking at some point we're going to, and we always start off the tour saying we really don't know anything. We are total, you know, amateurs, please be kind to us, just to bring the expectations down low.
Yes, and you know. And maybe have like a line, something about, we are not responsible for any of the drunk brunch crowd who happens to be passing through the park to, you know.
Yeah, to unlimited mimosas, right?
Exactly. We talked a little bit about the history and the. Could you talk a little bit more about, again, some of these programs? It seems like the local history is really important to you and to the library. And I mean, what, could you talk just a little bit more how you make that connection and bring all these things together into the programming?
Yeah, we had a program this past fall, which was related to an exhibition one of the librarians worked on, sort of pictures and ephemera of the neighborhood from the 1980s. And we had a panel discussion with Clayton Patterson and a Penny Arcade and Chris Rail. And it was moderated by a history librarian from the 42nd Street Library, Andy McCartney, who's great. And we had 120 people come to that, I think, which was well above what we could really handle. You know, not everybody could fit in the room. But that's sort of a good problem for us to have in a way.
Right.
We always want people to notice our program. So when we had something like that, it made us realize people are interested in the history of the neighborhood. And I think they also like to hear from people who actually were there and are still around.
Right.
You know, so we're definitely going to be working on more things like that in the future.
I am Evie Grieve, and you're listening to the East Village Eye on jasoncharles.net. We are here at the Tompkins Square branch of the New York Public Library on East 10th Street in the East Village, and we're talking with branch manager Corinne Neary. Can you talk about here what are some of the more popular items? Like what are people really coming in for to use, or what to find?
In terms of use, you know, DVDs are actually surprisingly quite popular in what people are checking out here. And I will say the children's books, the kids and the parents come in and they will return 30 or 40 books and check out another 30 or 40 books.
I didn't know you could take out that many at a time.
Oh, you can have 50 out.
50, is that
right?
Yeah,
you can have 50 items out.
Wow.
And the kids actually really take advantage of that. And the books are so thin, you know, they can make a pile of 50 books and it's, you know, not
right.
as big as the pile of 50 books for you might be.
Right.
It's pretty amazing. We can never keep up with the shelving in the children's room, which is a good problem to have.
Right. Wow. Well, I think when I was a kid, my local library could only take out like 8. And so if I had 50, I would have taken all 50 of the Hardy Boys out.
I don't know if
time.
You've ever been in here at, you know, 4 p.m. on a weekday. This room,
yeah,
it's, you can't even see the floor. There are people everywhere, especially if it's a rainy day. Just look out.
Right.
When I see it raining, I think, okay, let's get ready. Here they come.
Bring in some extra help.
In
terms of books, too, I was curious, as far as the selection goes, we talked a little bit about you have a lot of books of interest to downtown history, mm-hmm. and people in this neighborhood, but just like the general circulation books, like the Michelle Obama autobiography.
Yeah.
How does that selection process work? I mean, do you get the main branch? Okay, you here's 10 of this, 10 of that are the most popular things, or do you put in, I don't know, could you, I won't
in
keep
terms
rambling.
Of those new best-selling books, like the Michelle Obama memoir, those are purchased by a central department. And they sort of get distributed to the branches. What we do here in terms of our own selection is we curate a lot of the staff picks. So we put a lot of books on hold for our own branch. To all the books that you see on display when you're coming in and out, those are books that the librarians have picked to be there. And a lot of them we put on hold. So we can shape our collection to some degree that way.
Of late, what's been like, you talked about some of the kids' books, but maybe just for the more of like the adult circulation, what has been like the one of the hottest ticket items here?
Well, this isn't really a new one, but at this branch, I will say that St. Mark's is Dead, the Ada Calhoun book.
Yes.
That is an ever-present popular book at this branch. It goes in and out all the time. We always try to keep, you know, 5 copies on hand because they just fly. It just flies off the shelf.
It is a great book, and I am actually quoted in it. Just one. I need to get that up front. It's a disclaimer, but it
I
is.
I love
a,
that book myself. It's really good.
Yes, I agree. Well, that's. I have to tell her that, or maybe I'll tell her to listen to this episode on jasoncharles.net. You mentioned DVDs too. It's been a few years ago. I actually did a post about the DVDs. I came in here and took some stealth photos of the DVD collection. I hope that was okay. And I think some people are surprised how deep the collection is here. It's not, you know, you have some, you know, there's some more mainstream films, but you have some really great films from the 70s, good foreign films. Anyway,
oh, yeah.
It's a great collection.
Yeah, no, we have a lot of foreign films and older movies, and we have a much bigger DVD selection here than we did even a couple of months ago. because the library has moved into a different model for DVDs, you might have heard, or maybe not, where not all branches have them. We are what's called a DVD hub now.
Oh, I did not know that,
so,
actually.
So, yeah, you know, some of our neighboring branches, like Ottendorfer and Hamilton Fish, they don't have DVDs on the shelf. The patrons can still put them on hold to pick up at their branches. Huh. But if you want to browse a collection, this is sort of the East Village place to come.
Are they implying that perhaps the DVD is dead, or is it just they don't just see as much interest there?
It's not dead, but I think the production of them is going to be slowing down at some point in the future. And, you know, in order to maximize what's on the shelf, they're limiting it a little bit in terms of where. Does that make sense?
Yes. I'm asking in part two for personal reasons because my DVD player, I still have a DVD player, which some people make fun of me for some reason, but it's on its last legs, and I'm debating whether to buy a new DVD player.
You know, I don't use mine much these days, to be honest, but a lot of people here at this branch, I will say, you know, the limit of DVDs is 10, what you can have out.
Right.
And people, we have a lot of people who return 10 and take 10, return 10. That's all they, you know, they don't watch, they don't have cable, they don't do Netflix, they just use the library.
Okay.
So
you're not really helping with my dilemma if I should get a new DVD player.
Yeah, go for it.
We can, okay.
I mean, you can get one for like $10.
It's true. I think the Radio Shack closed, though. That was my go-to place over on Broadway. But, okay. Can you talk a little bit about, my mother still works at a library. She's been a librarian my entire life. And I kind of grew up in a library. I'd go there after school and hang out with her a little bit. I think she put me to work, shelving stuff, and, you know, I'd always sit and read. And, you know, to this day, she's 82 and she still works part-time at her local library. And so, I mean, libraries are very special places to me and have been my whole life. I'm just curious for you, if you want to talk a little bit about your own relationship with libraries. And this is sort of a two-part question, maybe. What's your favorite part about working here?
Well, I also grew up going to the library a lot, not because my mother worked there, but my mother worked a lot. She was a lawyer, and she worked, I don't know, I'm going to guess 60, 70 hours a week, something like that. So I was, you know, downtown at her office a lot. She would take me to the library. I'd pick up a bunch of books, take them back to her office. So that was something I grew up doing a lot. You know, I didn't always have the dream to work in a library. I came to it a little bit later, and I, you know, started when I was in my late 20s, I guess, almost 30, which for NYPL is sometimes surprisingly late. A lot of people who work at the NYPL have been working here since they were, you know, teenagers or early 20s. We call them lifers, I think is the term. So I came to it a little bit late, but I was drawn to it for some reason. I was working as a waitress for many years, and it's, in a way, it's sort of surprisingly similar, you know, dealing with people, you know, is the best part of the job, but it's also can be the most challenging part. So if you've been working in, you know, public service, customer service for a long time, it's not too much of a jump. If you are interested, you know, in books and other library things, it was sort of a natural jump for me.
We've talked a lot about programming here. I know there's the NYPL has the ongoing Stonewall 50. Can you talk a little bit about what some programs currently going on now, and what are some things coming up in the future?
Yeah, the Stonewall 50, if anyone's not familiar with it, is a sort of series of programs all over the library system related to an exhibition at the main library at 42nd and 5th. It's, you know, the 50th anniversary of the Stonewall riots this year, and we are a hub location for those programs also, so we have a bunch. The next two we have coming up are related to the drag march. So we have a couple of things. If you took part in the drag march, if you're, you know, just heard about it or saw it, or even if you're just interested in it, ways you can participate. And also, it doesn't have to be limited to people who participated in the drag march, but it's also open to people who, you know, participated or do participate in LGBTQ nightlife or activism. Anyone who has stories to share can come into these things. Our next one is the drag march sort of writing workshop.
And I think for a lot of people, too, the drag march, it starts in Tompkins Square Park, which, as we said earlier, is right across the street here from the branch. And even though it's a little chilly day today, I think a lot of people are thinking ahead to the summer. I think there's probably some special things going on here this summer.
We have a lot of special things happening this summer, including the New York Public Library system-wide summer reading kickoff will be at this branch, which is really exciting for us. It's the first time, and it's quite a big event. It's going to be on June 6th, which is a school holiday. It's going from 11 to 3:30. We have a lot of programs. Drag Queen Story Hour will be there. We have different authors coming. We have a lot of crafts, read-alouds, activities, face painting, henna tattoos, photo booths, all kinds of stuff. It's going to be in Tompkins Square Park, rain permitting.
Rain permitting.
Yeah, so just keep your fingers crossed for, for a nice day.
Okay, no rain. I think people who want to find more about activities, maybe some of the movies that are coming up, and obviously just, you know, do a search and find the Tompkins Square branch on the World Wide Web. And one thing, where we're talking about the internet and social media, I love your Instagram account. The branch's Instagram account is very fun. You had I think it was about a couple weeks ago, where someone randomly sent you a postcard.
Oh, yeah. Someone has been doing that.
What is that? Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I don't know who it is, but I hope they're listening now. Because they've only sent two postcards so far, but one was a postcard of the Flatiron Building last year with no, you know, caption, no message, just addressed to us. And then they recently sent one from a national park. I think it was, now I'm forgetting what national park. It was Montana or North Dakota, something like that.
I think it was Teddy Roosevelt National Park.
So, and again, no caption. The handwriting's the same. And I thought, oh my God, they're back.
And it's postmarked, though, in New York.
Yeah.
So they're not actually North Dakota somewhere. I think that's great.
Yeah,
I love that.
I don't know why they're thinking of us, but I appreciate it.
This is going into my novel and screenplay, just dibs, just FYI. And also just the Instagram account too. You had, it was the last summer, someone returned a book here that had been checked out, like, I don't know, what year, in the 70s?
Or oh, yeah.
What was, I can't remember the exact date, but it was just something that somebody had this book checked out for 35 years and they decided to return it to the branch.
They just decided to return it, yeah. Which, you know, happens occasionally. Hmm. This is also always exciting.
And newspapers love that kind of story. You know,
oh,
there's
yeah.
always that, you know, story about someone returns a book that was last checked out in, you know, 1919 or something, and that gets, you know, gets a lot of press.
Yeah, it's fun. It's usually someone's cleaning out, you know, someone's apartment or something like that, and they find the book and they feel terrible and they bring it back in, something like that, you know.
And do you want to give your Instagram?
Yeah, it's Tompkins_square_library.
Okay. It's easy to remember. Corinne, thank you for, you know, talking to us about the library here. And I don't know if there's any closing thoughts. You know, you can encourage people to use their local library branch or anything like that.
Yeah, please come in and see us. You know, if you're in the neighborhood and you haven't been in for a while, there might be some things you haven't seen, some things you don't know that we're doing. And we'd love to have you.
And maybe there'll be, I don't know, the next interesting film. Maybe you'll have like the David Lynch Film Festival here this summer.
I'll think about it.
Okay. I'm Evie Grieve for East Village Eye on jasoncharles.net. Thank you for listening.
You've been listening to The East Village Eye on jasoncharles.net.
The previous podcast is not affiliated with East Village Eye, the monthly magazine of popular and avant-garde culture that existed in print from May 1979 to January of 1987. However, if you'd like more information about this legendary downtown publication, and for archives and exclusive merchandise, including East Village Eye t-shirts and accessories, go to eastvillageeye.com or printedmatter.org. To continue to follow the podcast with Evie Grieve, please keep an eye out for Eye on the East Village from Spotify, Apple Podcast, and jasoncharles.net podcast network talk shows.
jasoncharles.net. Deep talk, deep sounds.
That was so deep.